Oh, yes. This is intro number 700 today. I've done 700 intros, and I keep messing them up because I ordered decaf, and I'm pretty sure by the way that my brain is cooking right now, that was definitely not decaf. So I'm going to try it again. Here we are, December 7th. Let there be talk. Getting close to the new year, waiting for the vaccine, waiting for the planet to be healthy again. Oh, I cannot wait. I cannot wait for that. Bring on some happiness. Bring on some good news. We need it, everybody. Great guest today. My man is a drummer. Can you believe it? Another drummer on Let There Be Talk. Another musician that everybody should know, should be a household name, and I like to be part of that, hoping that more people learn about who these guys are that played with your favorite artists. Billy Joel is who this man played with for 30 years. He was the drummer, and he still is a drummer. He's got a band right now, Slim Kings, that are fantastic, but he's played with all kinds of people. Mick Jones, Carly Simon, Elton John, Meatloaf, Karen Carpenter, Stevie Nicks. But Billy Joel was his gig for over 30 years. He has a new book out, and it was great to talk to this man. Fantastic human, and I think this is the type of band member you want. Just festive, funny, on it, gets it, 70 years old. Felt like I was talking to a 30-year-old. Great, great, great guest. Great drummer. Oh, my God. Come on, man. Those Billy Joel records. I grew up on them. The Stranger, 52nd Street, Glass Houses. Those three spun at my house, on my home stereo, in my car, on the Walkman, on the CD player. All of those. I don't know, man. This guy has got the feel. Big Shot. Just go listen to that and just be like, oh, yeah, this guy's great. Before I get into it, today is the last day to pre-order the new Dean Del Rey hoodie or T-shirt. Today is the last day. Email me or DM me on Instagram, Dean Del Rey Instagram, and DM me or Twitter. Do it, and I will give you the order info. Let's see, what else we got here? New Patreoners, patreon.com/DeanDelRay. 95 bonus episodes up right now. Do not sleep. Join my Patreon and help support the podcast. I give you all kinds of stuff like fun Zoom fest every weekend. You can Zoom with me and the group of people and talk music and records and comedy and films or architecture, whatever you're into. Brand new Patreoners, Ramen Barajas, Kevin Stanley, Frank Wortham, Matthias Kina, Michael Cosgrove, and Hugh Craig. Hugh Craig, fucking coming in strong. Thank you, brother. Love all you guys. Patreon.com/DeanDelRay. And also, I got the second podcast. If you are not aware yet, I have a second podcast going right now, and it's called The Grail, and we are on episode 4, and that was just dropped on Wednesday. And I had Naked and Famous Denim were my guests, so check that out. All right, let's get into it right now. I can't thank you guys enough, and I hope you are, I hope you're doing okay out there. It's a sticky, hot political climate out there. There's a serious pandemic going on. The holidays are here. A lot of people aren't working. I get it. I have not worked in 8 months. Just got lucky and was able to do 16 shows with Bill. Just got home. Bill Burr, my good man. Oh, God. Great. Did a Texas tour. So it was social distance shows, safe shows, felt good, super rusty, really stressful, wanted to be great. When you're opening for someone as great as Bill Burr, you've got to bring it. It is tough to do comedy when you've taken 8 months off. But I enjoy the challenge. Yesterday was my 11-year anniversary of doing stand-up. And I can't think of anything more in life that I want to do than stand-up for the rest of my life. I'm so glad I found it at 44 years old. Never too late. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, all of Texas. Any new fans out there. And thank you, Club Soda Kenny, for just helping me and supporting me in this amazing world of comedy and podcasting. Candles are lit right now for Mr. Liberty DeVito.
Well, here I am with Dean Del Rey, and my name's Liberty DeVito, and we're hanging out tonight. That's what we're doing for an hour.
What part of the city are you in?
I'm in Brooklyn.
Oh, rad. What part?
It's called Clinton Hill. Clinton Hill. It's you know it?
Yeah. It's been about a year in Fort Greene.
And yeah, Fort Greene's right down the block.
Exactly. And you know, I love it. I was living on 21st and 3rd all last year, and I got out. I didn't get out. I was coming back to work on a project, and then I was like, oh my God, I'm glad I'm not on the fifth floor walk up during COVID, you know, with everything closed, trying to get food.
I live on the fifth floor of my building, but we're in a big building. It has elevators. And the food thing in the beginning, Fresh Direct and Whole Foods, they all deliver. So my wife would have them drop it at the door, and then she'd scrub everything down before she brought it in the house. It was insane.
Oh, yeah. We were doing that, the food scrubbing at the beginning.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
It is crazy. And you and I, being artists and everything, it's just really mind-boggling not to – no more work.
No. It's – I did a couple of those parking lot things, which are really weird. After every song, they beep their horns.
Oh, my God.
It's really fucked up.
I just did a weekend of parking lots, you know?
Yeah.
And you get up there and you're like, all right, I'm out of the house. But then you're like, is this what we do now? You know, I'm looking at a guy that's played Madison Square Garden a few times, and then you're in a parking lot, you know?
Yeah, I played a tangent mall outlet.
Fuck.
From the garden to a mall.
There it is. That's the name of your next book. From the garden to the mall.
Fantastic.
I've had a shitload of drummers on the show, and I've always said this: show me a great band and I'll show you a great drummer. There is not a good band with a shitty drummer. It just does not happen.
Well, I'm from a believer that a band is only as good as the drummer. You know, it's just works out that way.
Yeah.
just takes any chick in the audience.
Now, you're at that age, you know, I have people on the show, and it's either who got you into music. It's either Kiss or the Beatles. That's really what it seems to be. If you're over 55, it's the Beatles and Ed Sullivan. And if you're under 55, I think it's the Beatles. Or sorry, Kiss. You know?
Yeah, yeah. For me, it was the Harmonicats. Did you ever see them on the Ed Sullivan show? No, I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, you know, that's the impact. And it's funny to think, because as much grief as, Ringo just doesn't get that glory, you know?
Oh, no. Well, he was surrounded by these monster musicians, you know? Yeah. I mean, they didn't really even play like some of these guys that we consider monsters today. You know, they didn't play like that, but as a unit, they couldn't be beat.
Yeah. And the songwriting and they
forget about it.
And then the amount of music put out in the small period of time.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
It is. It is. And even when you look at, you know, I grew up in the 70s and it was shitload of 70s radio going on. Yeah. And Billy was all over, Billy Joel was all over the radio. And as I look at the, you know, the years, it's like 76, 77, 78, right. 79, dropping these records. Some people are dropping two records in a year, loaded with hits. Each one, it's unreal what was in the water back then, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Billy was signed to one album a year, and he did it. Elton was signed to, I think, two albums a year when he was at the prime of his career. Just think about it. In 1967, the Beatles put out Sgt. Pepper's Magical Mystery Tour and the single Strawberry Fields with the flip side of Penny Lane.
Unreal.
In 1 year.
Did you see the Beatles?
I did not.
Damn, right? That Shea Stadium.
My sister saw them. It was sad. You couldn't hear them.
Yeah.
I play a lot now with a fellow named Billy J. Kramer, who was signed to Brian Epstein at the same time the Beatles were. And the Beatles wrote his first four hit singles. As a matter of fact, he did Do You Want to Know a Secret? And I Call Your Name before the Beatles actually recorded them. And he had a hit with Bad to Me, which John Lennon wrote for him. And he did a couple of other Beatles songs. But he's got stories of them in the cavern. And he always says that if you didn't see the Beatles in their leather jackets in the cavern, and you only saw them with the suits, you didn't really see the Beatles, you know, the way they really were. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, that's such a, I think back to you, and I think back to when I played music, and the Beatles there going to Germany, of course, and just doing that residency. There's nothing like playing these bars, like when you're playing in Long Island when you're 15, 16, 17 years old. Yeah. The amount of shit you're learning, and you're playing three sets a night, you're playing other people's music, you're right. Figuring out everything, and it is a straight-up workshop.
Yes, it is. And you know what? People ask me all the time, what's wrong with music today? You know, there's some great music out there still, but I always say that these shows like what's it called, the Teenage Idol show? What's it called?
Yeah, like The Voice and American Idol, all that.
Yes, all that crap. It's like the people that win that and are on that show. There, I compare them to when you go to a wedding and the bride goes up to the band and says, "Look, my cousin's a singer. Can you get her up? Can she sing a song?" And she sings a song, and everybody goes, "Oh, that's nice." And the old people go, "Oh, she's so good. She's so good." That's what they're like. No dues are paid. Nothing. So they win. Big deal. Nothing ever happens because they don't know how to do it. They have no idea how to do it. Like you say, you paid your dues, man. You played in clubs. You got the shit beat out of you, but you know, every night dragging your stuff around.
Yeah. 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 Horrible monitors, a van running out of gas, flat tires, no money. One of the band guys' girlfriends in there, like, get out of here. You know, it's on and on. Drug problems. You know, one guy's writing all the songs, the other people, I want my song. It's the whole thing that creates a character and your whole personality and everything when you're up there.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, I was in a band, we had a van, it was called the Death Trap, we called it, because if you crashed, you were dead, you know. And it got destroyed because one of the guys was so high at one time, he put diesel in it instead of regular gasoline with the end of the Death Trap.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Killed yeah. It, you know.
Now, when you're first starting out back in the day, you see the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. What makes you go to the drums and not guitar or bass or anything like that?
Well, to be honest with you, my dad had bought me a set of drums. I had never asked for the drums. All of a sudden, my cousin was selling drums. My dad bought them for me. And later on in my career, I asked my father, why did you buy me drums? And he said, because they didn't make Prozac when you were a kid.
Oh.
So, you know, he got me the drums because I was probably destroying stuff in the house and just like a crazy kid running around. So he thought that would calm me down.
Oh, my God. Just there's nothing worse than I started on drums. I had a neighbor who was the drummer for Pablo Cruz, gave me a kit, you know. I was just sitting there like beating it in our apartment. Gah, 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 gah. No band around. I go, this sucks. I need a guitar. You know, it's hard to play without other people.
Or I can't play without other people. I never did a drum solo in my life. Well, once I did one in the documentary Hired Gun is the only time that I did a drum solo ever. Because they forced me to do it. They said, we got to have this climactic part of you breaking up with Billy and how upset you are. And I want you to knock the drums over at the end of the solo.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never thought I could play a solo or anything. But when Kenny Aronoff came up to me after that solo and he goes, I watched you do that. Man, that was pretty good. I was like, okay, that was good. That's the last time you'll ever hear something like that.
Never did a drum solo, huh? That's wild, because you're in that era of drum solos, the straight up 70s.
No, never did a drum solo. You know, I don't believe in them. I think it's like, you know, 20 minutes of self-indulgent bullshit. And, you know, it's a break for the guitar player and bass player.
They go off,
get a drink, cigarette. And you're there sweating, and you want to end, and they're like, where are they, man? You know?
It's so true. What was your first kit? Do you remember the brand?
Yeah, it was a Leedy kit. My cousin was selling this big 26-inch bass drum Leedy Mother of Pearl kit. The bottom heads on the tom were tacked on, and it was just like this big antique. If I had it now, it'd be great as a showcase thing. But, you know... he went and bought a new brand new Red Sparkle set of Ludwig. You know, so I got this big old kit, you know, and actually got rid of it not too long after that. You know, when the Beatles hit, like you said, that was it for me. And I said, I need new drums. I can't play this old. No, actually, my parents got me a Japanese set, Tempo, they were called. But they were Silver Sparkle. And I just had a tom, a snare, and a bass drum. That's what it started out with. I had to order a special floor tom. But that's what I really learned on.
When you get the kit, are you just immediately trying to play with some other people in the neighborhood, or what are you doing?
Well, like you've probably heard a million times, after the Beatles, everybody went out and either bought a guitar or a set of drums.
Yeah.
So me and a couple of friends, we didn't know what we were doing, you know. But... reality, I had a friend that was older than me that lived down the block. My parents were friends with his parents, and his name was Mike Lackus. He went to school, the same high school that I went to. He was older than I was, and he was just the teachers hated him. He was the kind of guy that said, you know, they would say, hey, Lackus, you're chewing gum in school, spit it out. And he would just turn his head and just spit it across the room, like that kind of guy he was. And he got me and my friend Jerry, who had just got a guitar for the Beatles time, and he hired us to play a party once. It was the best thing. I think I was like 14 years old. Wow. Playing Rumble for the first time, you know, and Walk Don't Run and stuff like that. And you know, a fight broke out, of course. It was in somebody's basement. The girls loved me because I was a young kid, you know. They were like seniors already. So, yeah, you know, that was my first experience of like, this is really cool, this could be great, you know.
Wow, man, it's crazy. I just think about all those beginner gigs that you're doing, keg parties and, you know, VFW halls or anything. You play anywhere you can. And man, you think back, imagine if, like, I do comedy now, so I've marked down every gig I've ever done in a book. And it's like,
so let me ask you this. So you went from something that was relatively hard to something that's really, really hard.
Yeah. 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 I like to feel like shit. I mean, which brings me to you, because you played Saturday Night Live. I'm 54. So I was a kid and I was way into rock, but I was way into comedy too. And John Belushi had a massive impact on me from Saturday Night Live. And so did, the entire comedy thing that was starting to happen, the George Carlins, the Cheech and Chongs, the Richard Pryors, that stuff. And I was so into Saturday Night Live, you know, and So I wanted to do comedy, but I just was a kid and there was no kids doing comedy. What do? You know?
Right.
You know, the neighborhood, we're playing rock and I loved rock at the same time. I'm watching SNL and there's comedy, but then there's Devo, you know, there's Billy Joel, there's fucking, you know, the Stones doing, I mean, it's unreal how great that show was back then.
It was brilliant. I think I played it maybe five times, you know, like four times with Billy, once with Stevie Nicks. And the different casts were amazing. You know, the original cast, of course, was great. I'll never forget, we're ready to go on. And it's the first time we're on. We're getting ready. We're going to play Just the Way You Are. And Billy's piano goes out. Oh. And right before, as they're counting down, and Belushi walks up to them while they're working on it and goes, "Hey, don't worry about a thing, man. If you blow it, you blow it in front of 20 million people," and just walks away.
Oh, man, he throws that at him. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Did you guys get to hang with Belushi and Aykroyd? Because I know when the Stones were there, they rehearsed in the basement of NBC there for a couple of days.
Yeah, well, I didn't hang out. I hung out with Aykroyd later on. The band that was Billy's band, we actually went and played on the island that they all went to in the summertime. I forget what it's called. But he came to one of our shows, you know, and we hung out all night. We got drugs and everything. And all he did was talked about the blues, oldies, R&B, like Ray Charles and all that kind of stuff. He was talking about records all night. All night. It was at James Taylor's house, the party.
Oh, wow.
Whoa. And me and him just hung out in the room and just talked about music all night. It was great.
James Taylor. Another one. I mean, look at that 70s thing that was going on. Like, my first singing lessons was Just the Way You Are, the song. So it has such a deep spot for me because it was really the first time the teacher's playing piano. I'm in the room. My mom's like, "Okay, I guess you take some singing lessons." And it's so spooky. Your voice is just, "Don't go change it." You know, like you're just trying to sing. You're a kid. But to look back on that era, they don't really have that anymore. The Billy Joels, the James Taylor, the Cat Stevens.
Right.
One of my favorites of all time is Tapestry, you know, Carole King. I think it's a masterpiece. Yeah. But you know, it's singer-songwriter, but it is also rocking. It was kind of rocking. You know, now they call it yacht rock, which I can't stand that they, you know, they call it that. That dick on there, yacht rock. Oh, just like, to me, it kind of downgrades it a lot, you know. We're talking about some of the best songs ever wrote.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was the time. And then the songwriters and the producers who produced those records put them together with great players, you know, that could really make those records swing. You know, that's what happened to us. Billy knew what he was doing when he got us. We were a band before we got with Billy. We were a band called Topper. Myself, Russell Jabbers, and Doug Stegmeyer, and Howard Emerson. We were a band called Topper for about 5 years. And when Billy got us one at a time, he got us in his band, you know?
Yeah.
And so he knew what he was doing. He got guys to play on his first album that had been playing together for 5 years already.
Yeah, you know? yeah. I get it. It's just like, hey, I got the bass player. And then the bass player's like, well, I got a drummer.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. We got guitar players, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing the songwriting that was going down with Billy. Now, when you guys were in the studio, I've been in bands for years. I know how it works. Would you guys jam out the songs or would he just write the whole thing on piano, come in and go, here's the tune, and then you guys bring your feel?
Well, a little bit of both. He would come in with an idea. Like he says, I got this idea. It doesn't have lyrics or anything like that. And like he'd come in with a song called Zanzibar that's on the 52nd Street album.
Yeah.
And all he would be singing and playing on piano is do-do-do-za-do-boo-da-boo-dee-dee-da. You know, no words or nothing yet. But if we come up with a groove and while he's playing that feel, he would go home and finish the song because he knew that it was going to swing once he finished it.
Right.
You know, and a song like that, when we did the demo for it, it didn't have the line, "I've got a jazz guitar." So there was no jazz idea of jazz in it at all. But when he wrote that line, "I've got a jazz guitar," all of a sudden, Phil Ramone was like, "You guys can break into jazz right here, and we can get somebody to do a great solo on it," you know? So his lyric kind of led the way of what we would play. You know, I think he just got a message.
I did?
You know, I heard your phone ding.
Oh, really? Mine?
I think so.
You got better hearing than me, and you're a drummer next to that snare.
I have hearing aids. That's all I can hear. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. How do you like them?
They suck, man. I mean, you know, I tuned the glasses and the hearing aids, and now I got to put the mask on around my ears. My ears are like this now. They're like this. They stick out like that.
Yeah, my buddy got hearing aids, and he played B3 all his life, so he's just next to that. And Leslie just, gah! And so he got hearing aids, and he immediately got rid of them because he's all, "I don't want to hear that much."
Well, you know, it's funny. My wife, the nights are getting nicer. They're starting to cool down, and my wife needs to have the air conditioning on, and she needs a fan on so she doesn't hear the traffic outside.
Yeah,
I don't like fans. I don't like to feel the hair on my arms blowing or anything like that. So I go in the living room, take my hearing aids out, open all the windows, and I sleep tight.
Oh, yeah.
cars go by. I don't hear them.
Yeah. People need that white noise, and it's weird to me. It's just like, I got an AC on the roof here, and it's like, and I'm like, oh, God.
Once you lock your brain into that, you can't get it out, man. It's like, oh, man, yeah. I'm never going to sleep.
The reason I wanted to bring up the songwriting, because I've probably had 40 drummers on here, and all of my favorites. And there is that thing where I try to explain to people, they're like, "Well, all the drummers get ripped off and stuff." And I said, "Well, there's kind of two stories to that. One of them is I've worked with drummers where you're in the studio, you're working on a tune, and it gets grinding. And after like 6 hours, the drummer's like, "Yo, man, I'm gonna head home. You guys got this. And I'm gonna go see the old lady and, whatever." And they're not there. Then there's that drummer, and these are the ones I always give a songwriting credit to, that are in the room until the place burns to the ground. And what they do on a singer-songwriter type of writer, let's say a Springsteen, let's say a Wilco, let's say any kind of that kind of thing where the guy's writing on an acoustic or a piano, as soon as the beats and the bass come in and everything, it changes the flavor of the tune so much better. Especially when I write it and I go, "Wow, this is starting to sound cool. I would have never," maybe the drummer's playing something different, you know, a halftime, a rim shot, whatever he's doing. I'm like, "Oh, this is adding to the whole thing, man." You know?
Right. Well, that's the thing. I'm considered a songwriter's drummer, just like Ringo was a songwriter's drummer and everything like that. It's like Billy would come in sometimes with a whole tune, you know, "Just the Way You Are" was one of those. And it was like, okay, this is great. Just him sitting down behind the piano, playing the piano and singing it. It's a great song. What am I going to do to get on this song and not step all over what he's doing? So that's where the creative part comes in. Like, I've got to make up this groove that maybe nobody else ever heard before and doesn't interfere with what he's saying and matches the mood of what he's saying, you know? So, you know, I never took lessons and I don't know how to read music or anything like that. So I get Billy's lyrics and I want to know what he's singing about. That's how I play the drums, to what the vocal is singing about. Not just like, you know, "I'll just play anything, you know, it's a rock song. Let me play a rock beat." No. So much you can create in between the words that he's saying. You can hit at certain places, you know.
Especially grooves. I mean, you know, when you're like, let's say a Mellencamp, you know, and he's playing Scarecrow. He's just strumming that thing, you know. But then when the groove comes in, you're like, "Oh, wow." I mean, that makes the song just as much as what he's singing and playing.
Sure. Well, it definitely does. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, everybody knows the story about Only the Good Die Young. Billy came in and it was reggae. I was like, come on, man, this sucks. And then I started playing that quick shuffle. And it was like, whoa, that's it, you know?
A reggae. Dun, 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 only the good. Dun, 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 a die young.
It was like, come up, Virginia. Go on, let me wait. It's awful. It was awful.
Hold on, Liberty. I got to do a quick ad. Holiday time. How are you guys? I've got a great offer for all you Dale Razors. Now, right now, you can get $10 off your purchase of Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com and enter the code DELRAY, DELRAY. That's right. You get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame. Just go to skylightframe.com and enter the code DELRAY. Skylight, SKYLIGHTFRAME.com. Skylightframe.com. The promo code is Delray. You're asking what the hell is a skylight frame? It's the ultimate holiday gift. And the holidays are just around the corner. Check it out. Perfect gift. If you want to give a gift that will make your mom, dad, grandmother, or any family members feel good, here it is, right here. Check it out. Skylight Frame is a photo frame you can update instantly by email from anywhere. A great way to feel close to those you love and even when you're separated. It sets up effortlessly. My mom even did it under 60 seconds. Just plug it in, use the touchscreen to connect to your wireless network and enjoy. Sending photos to the Skylight is effortless. Everyone in the family can just email them from their personal Skylight email address and they'll pop up on your screen. So, you know, you're just chilling at the house. Bloop, there's a photo of your grandma right there. Happy holidays, Granny. Multiple people can send photos from your family and it is super easy. It has a black frame and white mat, so it looks like a real photo. This thing looks great. I got it here in my house and I look over and I always forget that it's not, you know, like a photo I snapped years ago. It's just in this cool digital frame. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you don't love Skylight, they'll offer you a full refund. You cannot lose. Please purchase now. Help yourself out. Great gift. And help out the show. You're going to get 10 bucks off. Come on, get it. Now, once again, $10 off if you purchase Skylight Frame. Go to skylightframe.com and enter the code DELRAY. That's right. Get $10 off your purchase of Skylight just to go to skylightframe.com. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com. Promo code is DELRAY, DELRAY. I guarantee you're going to love this thing. The perfect holiday gift. All right, let's get back to it. So anyway, where were you guys doing all these classic records? Out in LA or in New York? Where were you recording?
A&R Studios in Manhattan. It was on the corner of 7th Avenue and 52nd Street.
Oh shit, there's the classic record, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And you did them all in there.
Well, yeah, all the way up to Nylon Curtain. Nylon Curtain, they were selling the building. It's been ripped down since then, so the studio's gone. And so Nylon Curtain, we started to try other studios. And then Innocent Man was in a totally different studio.
Yeah.
That was great because it was on 42nd Street. So
back in the old days. Yeah.
Back in the old days. And so this place was like we went in and if it was raining, the ceiling started to fall down and it would leak and everything like that. But it was a great place to record because nobody knew where it was. Nobody can come by. No record company guys would come by. And when we were done after all night, you know, playing the music and listening back to what we did, just go across the street and have a good time and then go home.
Yeah. Boy, that was a different era of New York, man.
Oh yeah.
Think about that. The Deuce, you know, like the, It's so wild. I caught the tail end of that era, and then to go back a few years later, the Giuliani era or whatever, and you're just kind of like, whoa, camera shop, M&M store, Disney. You're like, what is this? When you guys are in there in the studio, who produces the Stranger record?
Phil Ramone.
Phil Ramone.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, Phil was so good to us. He taught us so much. We called him Uncle Phil. He was like the fifth Beatle, you know, in the studio. Yeah. And, you know, he when he saw us play live, he got us in the studio. He saw us at Carnegie Hall. Then we met him in the studio. And he said, look, I want you guys to be the rock and roll animals that you were on stage. But I'm going to show you how to bring it in and make a hit record, you know. And that's what he did.
Wow. You know? Yeah, yeah, like with finesse, but also power.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. You know, when you're starting to play with Billy, of course, all these kind of powerhouse drummers are in the mix now. Bonzo's around, and Keith Moon's around, and are you looking at those guys like, wow, this is another level of drumming from what you were growing up on in the 60s, back where the guy just wore a suit and just kind of played rim shots or whatever. You know what I mean? You know, Cocktail Kid or something. And all of a sudden it's like, what the hell is this?
Right, right. Well, you know, Keith Moon was around forever. You know, I mean, growing up, I bought Ken Explain on a 45, you know, and listened to that over again. And all those albums, you know, Magic Bus and all that stuff was way before. That was 60s stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But Led Zeppelin, you're going to hate me for saying this, but I like the playing, the music of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
I just can't take Robert Plant's voice. I just, you know, when it went from like those guys playing rock, like The Who and all that, swinging around the microphone and Hendrix up there and going crazy and all that kind of stuff. And then Robert Plant's up there with a girl's blouse on and his pants are down to his pubic hairs and this big lump in his pants. It's like, I can't look at that.
I'm the opposite. Like The Who never hit me. I understand The Who, and each year I always tweet, okay, it's 2019. I'm going to try to get into The Who again, you know? I know The Who. I've seen The Who. I saw The Who a few years ago. They blew my mind. I saw them in 82 on their first farewell. They were unbelievable with Kenny Jones on drums and Eminence front and all that. But The Who, there's something about it that just never got me full on.
Well, I appreciate them because, like, what's his name? Pete Townsend.
Yeah.
Lead guitar? Not really.
No.
Playing chords. He's playing chords. You know who's doing all the lead? It's the bass and the drums.
Yeah.
And the drums are all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, so it made this unique thing. There's a great documentary out that two of these filmmakers did. And they picked a band. They said, we're going to pick a band and we're just going to do a documentary about them. And it turned out they weren't called The Who yet, but it was The Who in this little club. And it just kept following this band. And then they broke and became The Who. It's amazing to watch them from the beginning.
Wow. When did that come out?
I don't know the name of the documentary. I saw it about a year and a half ago, maybe.
Shit, I'll find that.
It's really cool. It's really cool to watch this. The photographers didn't even know what they were filming. You know.
Yeah. When you guys get your records out, and I mean, it's got to be crazy. Like you're playing in New York all over, and then you join Billy's band. All of a sudden, you're on SNL, and then your guys are out on tour. You hit records everywhere and shit. That stuff's wild. But do you remember any of the, I think Blue Oyster Cult played with you guys before, something like, you guys remember any weird lineups you guys were on?
Yeah. You know, in my book, I talk about some of them. You know, one of the weirdest ones was we were opened up for ZZ Top when they did that.
The
Texas tour.
Yeah, the circus one.
We're up there with there's cows on the stage.
Snakes and buzzards and shit.
It was crazy, man. I mean, they kept the animals away from us, but it was nuts. You're playing behind a picket fence, you know?
Oh my God. You know, I'm a huge ZZ Top fan of those early records, and I never knew anything about that era until I saw the documentary. I was like, this is wild.
It was insane. It was insane. My band, the Slim Kings, the band I'm playing with now too, we've opened up for the ZZ Top a couple of times, you know, and I mean, they're down to normal now. They just have the guitars and no animals on the stage, but you know, they still play great.
It would have been funny if you just showed up with like a big, like one of those milk cows, the plastic ones. And just like, hey, I've been taking care of this since the tour we did in the 70s. Just a perfect prank on Billy Gibbons. You know how he is. He's like, I like that. It's far out, man.
Yeah, it's far out. That's funny, boy. That's really funny.
Wait, once you get up and going, what is your drum kit of choice? Are you like, do you start getting an endorsement and do you get into Ludwig, Gretsch, DW, later on DW, but who were you into?
Well, I started out, you know, when I auditioned for Billy, I had this set of Ludwig, but it was a silver bass drum and burgundy tom-toms and a different color floor tom and stuff. It was just a mishmash of stuff because I was dragging it around playing clubs before that on Long Island. And so when I auditioned for Billy, after I got the gig, he said, what do you want? Do you want anything? And I said, yeah, how about getting me a new set of drums?
Yeah.
So he went and put his credit card down at Frank Wolf's on 48th Street in New York City. And I got this set of Pearl. They were great drums. They were fiberglass shells, really thin. And I got them because I'd heard and I'd seen the set that Steve Gadd had. And it was like, this is an amazing sounding set. So that's what I got. That made it through Turnstiles, The Stranger. And then the stands were falling apart when we went on the road. It just couldn't hold up. So at the time, Tama, I saw them in a store. Tama was making stands that had a knurl on them. So when you locked it in, it wouldn't move. The stand wouldn't move. So I went to Tama and I said, hey, this is me. I'm a big shot. Can you give me drums? And that's when I got my first endorsement. First endorsement, yeah, with Tama. And I stayed with them for like 21 years. Wow. And then a friend of mine, Joe Hibbs, went from Tama to Mapex, and I went with him to Mapex. And then Joe passed away, and I thought, okay, it's time to go somewhere else. And I found this boutique company called Liberty Drums in from
your
England.
Name? It's absurd. I love it.
We call Liberty Drums from England. Yeah. And I said, you know, we can make beautiful music together. And they said, yeah, it would be great. You know? But they're really small. They're really tiny, you know.
Yeah, like a 22 bass drum?
No. My bass drum is a 24.
Gotcha.
But, I mean, the company's really tiny.
Oh, I got you.
Like if I order a new tom-tom, it takes like, you know, 3 or 4 months to get it.
Yeah.
But they're cool. They sound great, though. They really do.
You never left the city, huh?
Well, I did. I grew up on Long Island.
Well, yeah, but like, I mean, East Coast, New York, you live, you know.
9 years I lived in Florida.
Oh.
Boy, was that a mistake.
Well, what were you doing out there?
That cost my second marriage. You know, it, Florida is beautiful for like about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, this sucks. Food sucks. It's too hot. Alligators, poisonous snakes. What the hell am I doing here? Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. So I drank my way through there. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Are you clean now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
15 years now. Yeah. 15 years. Yeah. I met my wife now. I went out one night and I came back and I was like gone. And the next morning she woke up. We both woke up and she goes, I think you should stop drinking. Or else you're out. You get out of here.
Wow.
I said, when would you like him to stop? She goes, now would be a good time. I went, okay.
Whoa, really?
Yep, that was it.
I saw the movie, of course, Hired Gun. Mm. I knew what was coming. I knew it was going to be, the format of it was going to be, they're going to have the one guy that's going to really let you know what the behind the scenes were, and then you're going to have the other guys that keep it glossy because they're still working, you know. And as I watched all your scenes, I could relate to you so much because I sat there and thought, man, it's such a brutal gig to be in a band, especially when the main guy is the songwriter. And I don't think people understand. And there is so much politics too. And there's so much that goes on in a band. People are like, you know, some people would be like, that's fucked up what they did to him. And then other people would be like, well, maybe he was drunk all the time and got on the dude's nerves. Or maybe he was late for lobby call for 5 years straight. There's so much bullshit out there, you know. But it is a brutal, brutal gig. And when I looked at it, I was like, well, this guy, he went longer than I would say 95% of the people in a band.
You know, it was 30 years. My favorite line, you know, like you said, everybody's like, oh, the guy probably got drunk and he did this. But when somebody parts ways in a band, they always blame it on musical differences.
Oh, I love that one. Musical differences.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and really what happened was the lead singer was fucking the bass player's wife. And, you know, it was musical differences.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Musical differences.
That's what I heard on the radio when me and Billy parted ways, you know. And somebody said on the radio, said, well, they're saying it's musical differences. I was like, bullshit. Go see the play, Moving Out. The guy, the drummer's playing exactly the same thing I created, you know?
Yeah. It's not all of a sudden there's drum loops, you know, back there. And they got the guy from Beck, you know, I'm a loser, but yeah. I mean, it is weird when you play with a guy for a long time. Somebody once said to me, don't be sick, you know, don't be sick. Like if a drummer is sick or a bass player is sick and they get a fill-in guy for like a week, all of a sudden,
goodbye.
It's not necessarily that the guy's better. It's just this kind of fresh, weird feel. And it tricks you. It really tricks you of like, wow, listen how good we sound, huh? And the other guys in the band are like, I guess so. You know, it's really a weird thing. And I played with like 10 different drummers and every one of them were completely different. And there's three that I love and the rest, I liked playing with them, but not like these three.
Right. I got a bass player into the gig with Billy Joel, right? And he was in playing with us. Then he had an audition for a TV show. And it was on the night that we were playing. And he sent a sub in because he was used to doing that. He'd moved to Nashville and that's what they do in Nashville. And well, last time I looked, the sub is still playing with Billy.
Oh my God. I love it. I love the balls of that. I'm going to send a sub in like it's a cover band, you know, like a sub. This thing. Dude, like, you know, Billy's like, looks up, like, who the fuck are you? Oh, yeah, I'm subbing in for Ronaldo tonight. He's like, what? I mean, dude, what era was that? Was that when you guys were big?
Oh, yeah, it was like during the River of Dreams tour.
And he, like, what TV show would be more important than a job?
A new show that was coming on, somebody doing a talk show. And when it turned out, the show never really happens.
Oh, my God. That guy's fucking furious to this day.
Yeah, he's still, you know, some of the guys, I got over it, my anger and all that kind of stuff about what went down. And it took a life coach to help me get through it and stuff. You know, I still talk to her every now and then. She keeps me from jumping off the ledge. But some of these guys, they're still carrying it. You know, you start to talk to them about it. Like, you know, remember when we were playing with Billy and then all of a sudden it gets into like, yeah, but he fucked me really badly. That son of a bitch, you know, going on and on and on. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Get over it already. Yeah.
Well, when I watched you on Hired Gun, I was like, whoa, this is hardcore. But I also did feel that weirdness of where they brought the contracts into the green room and they're like, okay, here's the new deal. And if you don't like it, you just go out the side door. No biggie. Your equipment will be out there. And I was like, whoa, man, that is fucking harsh.
Yeah. Yeah. really weird, right? How about the guy from what band was he in? Where they said, we understand you want to make more money. Well, go down the block where you live, and there's a pizzeria down there. They're looking for drivers.
Hey, man, rock and roll is brutal.
It really is brutal.
It is brutal. And I mean, when you get to 30 years, it's obvious that you're like, well, this is never going to change after 30 years. And then when it does, I think the one thing you have to get used to is the adrenaline being gone of these big badass gigs, your own room, sometimes maybe private jets or whatever, the luxury and everything. But then you realize, oh, this isn't none of my luxury, you know?
Right. Yeah. You know, it was like I lived in a bubble. Man, I could do anything. I could do something that break the law, you know, run a car into a hotel and get out of there, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden the bubble went pop and it was gone.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, who am I now? What do I do now? And then when he went on tour the next time, I kept getting phone calls like, hey, you're coming to St. Louis. Well, let's hook up. Yeah, I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah. Right.
It really did suck. And it was, it was hard coming back, but when I spoke to one guy, Wayne Blanchard, who worked for Sabian Cymbals at the time, and he said to me, he said, you know what you got to do? You got to stop saying that you were formerly with Billy Joel. You got to stop saying you were Billy Joel's drummer. No, you know who you are? You're the guy that Billy Joel chose to help him create those unbelievable hits and remarkable tours. That's who you are. And it's like every time I turn the radio on now and I hear the record, yeah, that's me. I'm still there. You know? Yeah. I didn't go away.
No. And you're a fucking monster player, man. You know? Like monster player, like it's the sound of that band, man. When you listen to it, you know, bum 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 gum gum. You know, it's just like when you hear that shit, it's like a lot of people 99% of the people have no idea. That's Billy Joel. But what they don't understand is, and I've told people this a million times, that only happened because of the chemistry.
Yeah.
He could have been in there with a million different dudes and his career would have never taken off. There was just a chemistry and a lightning in a bottle. You guys are in the studio and you're just pounding out these crushing records.
Yeah, well, he made three albums before we got there.
Yeah.
And there's some great songs. There's some great songs on there. I mean, Piano Man is probably the worst one out of all of them. But nobody knows them because the chemistry didn't happen. It wasn't there with the band that he was playing with. He was insecure, too, as a writer and singer.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, we all are. You know, it's like you're never sure if it's good. You're like, is this the...
Never.
Especially when you're around during Bruce and Dylan and you know, like I said, Cat Stevens and Kris Kristofferson, all these like songwriters that are out there. It's just like, is this any good? You know,
people ask me, why didn't you write songs? Why didn't you write songs back then? I was like, are you kidding me? Did you know the guy that I was sitting next to when he was writing a song? I'm sitting next to him on the piano stool. I'm going to compete with that? What are you, crazy?
Hey, here's one of mine, Billy. That's one of the main things that breaks bands up.
I would have been like Ringo.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a song, Octopus's Garden. What do you think, boys? I'm sure John went in the bathroom with Paul and goes, do we have to do this?
Fuck, we got to give him one, mate. You know? We got to give him one.
Come on, man. It's the last album we're doing. Man. I got to give him one.
I love that rooftop concert. Holy shit, is that cool. You can feel it. You can feel it. It's a funeral. It's done. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, to look at that. I can watch it a million times. Just look at that. You know, they got the fucking, you know, Lennon's got on a fur jacket because it's cold. Some woman's fur jacket. I mean, it's fucking rad.
Yeah, George is wearing green pants.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Who wears green pants? And Paul's got a suit on.
He comes, he shows up old school.
Yeah. And I posted yesterday on Facebook. I said, you know, I love Paul and I love his vocals on Oh Darling. I think they're great. I'm Down. I love that kind of stuff. But I got a feeling if he never sang anything again after that, it was like, that's the shit right there. Yeah. When he hits that bridge and his voice is like, how do you do that?
Yeah. You know? For me, it's Band on the Run. I think it's the greatest song for me that he ever wrote, because it's this weird saga. It's a couple different tunes, and it takes me back to the public pool when I was a kid. My mom would drop me off there, 25 cents all day. That was my babysitter, the swimming pool. And those big fucking metal horn speakers. You know, that come on and I'd be on the high dive, you know, like I'm in heaven, man. That's the shit.
I played a while with Denny Lane, you know, who was in Wings.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to hear horror stories.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
From playing with Paul.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Like he needed to borrow money because he got in trouble with the English version of the IRS. And Paul said, I'll lend you money, but you got to give me your half of Mulligan time. Are you fucking kidding me?
Whoa. No shit.
Paul, you could fund a football team.
I want it all, mate. him and fucking Lennon, man, they learned, you know, they just got in a room together and they're like, I don't care who played on this. You know, it's just us two.
Eric Clapton, who? My Guitar Gently Weeps? Eric Clapton, who? Should we put his name on the album?
Nah.
Fuck him.
No, we're the Beatles. We're bigger than everyone.
Right, oh, Paul sings a song, but Paul sings Yesterday by himself.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Mick Taylor. That's the Mick Taylor, you know? Mick Taylor thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Mick Taylor leaves, they never sound like that again. I wonder why. Oh, my God.
Yeah, really.
It's interesting that, I mean, you got into a pretty gnarly battle with Billy, of course. You sued those guys, the record company and Billy, and you ate him alive on Hired Gun. And he ends up doing the foreword on your book, which is unbelievable. So, I mean, I you know what? I love that part about the story because I know how fucking shitty bands can be. And you're not speaking from your heart. You're speaking from pain, you know? And then when you sit back and like you said, you get a little life coaching and stuff, you go, okay, wait a minute here, man. I did have a great ride. How do you mend this? Do you make a call?
Yeah, well, I emailed him.
Oh, wow.
I got his email, found it through another friend. And I emailed him. I said, look, this feud between drums and piano has got to end. You know, because people were dying that used to work for us. They were dying all over the place. So I was surprised to see how fast he wrote me back and said, yeah, I feel the same way. I was a little dissatisfied with how it ended myself. So we got together. We had a meal. We met for breakfast. I knew it was a new Billy when I said, we can meet for dinner or we can meet for breakfast the next day. We said, had a day set up. And he goes, well, I can't meet for dinner around 8 o'clock because that's when I put my girls to sleep. You know, he's got two young daughters. I have one. He has two young daughters. And so I knew this is a new Billy. I got to put my girls to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be like, no, I'll meet you at 8 o'clock. We'll be on the floor by 10. So, I mean, you know, it was tough saying bad things about him in the interview. You know, when you broke up with a girlfriend that you really, really loved or an ex-wife or whatever that you really loved and you always bad-mouthed her when somebody said something, she's a fucking cunt, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And you felt bad inside for saying it because you still felt a great feeling for them.
Yeah.
That's what it was when I used to say bad things about Billy. It was like, I still love the guy. I mean, we did such great things together. You know, so I'm glad it's over. And we still talk. You know.
What was that meeting like? You go in, are you pretty nervous?
I don't know if I was nervous. You know what was great about it? We talked about what we're doing in our careers. And he was like, I'm getting older. I'd like to wind it down a little bit, you know. I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this. And I was there not asking for my gig back. I didn't want it back. So it was just the friend part of a meeting, not the drummer or the piano player anymore. It was the friends meeting. So it was great. I mean, you know, he ordered bacon and eggs and I ordered pancakes. And it was like, really cool.
You think you'll ever sit in maybe at one of those garden gigs once the COVID's over, like come down and do a song?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. My favorite thing was watching John Lennon in a video somewhere I saw, and somebody yelled out to him, "John, when are the Beatles getting back together?" And he just turned to the person and he said, "Tomorrow." And he just walked away.
Great one, because you know they get that asked that every day. You know?
Every day, yeah. I did that same question every day. Are you going to sit in with Billy? Are you going to go play with Billy again? What do you think? It could happen.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Wait, the phone's ringing. It's Billy, okay. I think. Hold on.
I had to ask it, man, because it's I'm always one. I'm a softie when it comes to that. That's a ticket I would buy. Like, oh, fuck, Liberty's back. I gotta go see this. You know, this is gonna be good. I can see it. You come on, the crowd's going fucking crazy. You know, but I get it too. You've moved on. You've healed yourself, and you're playing with the Slim Kings now, and you're enjoying life, it sounds like. Did you make some good money on that, or was it just kind of all burned up?
With Billy through my career?
Yeah.
Well, I managed to raise a family, you know, and I lived well for a long time. When it came crashing down, it was at the same time as I got divorced from my second wife.
Ooh.
And she really ate a lot of money, you know. Yeah. So I kind of started from zero. You know, but I was able to get out of it. You know, I was lucky enough. You know, I told my ex-wife, I said, you know, you're asking for enough money that after 20 years or 10 years, you've taken it all. You've taken everything I have. Why don't you just take it all now? I never want to talk to you again. Never want to see you again.
Yeah.
You know, and she did.
It's funny. The way they shot that hired gun, you know, you're in your apartment and everything, they made it almost look like, oh, this guy's got nothing. Look, he's in that little box. You know what I mean?
In a rocking chair. He's got a rocking chair.
Yeah, they really made it look like that.
Well, you know, it was great too, all the other guys. And I'm kind of disappointed in myself for doing this, but all the other guys that you see in there, like Rudy Sarzal and Kenny's got his outfit on with his sunglasses and all that stuff that they wear. And Rudy's got his leather jacket on. I'm wearing like a pair of shorts and a V-neck t-shirt, black faded V-neck t-shirt. And I'm walking down the street in Brooklyn, like, you know, like I'm living in the street now, you know?
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
Yeah, well, no, it's not what it's like. I found the secret to success of a musician. How a musician becomes successful: marry a woman that has a job.
Oh my God! What does your wife do?
My wife works for a company called Goldman Sachs.
Oh shit!
Yeah. She's not in the investment part of it. She does this thing where they, you know, TED Talks, that program.
Yep.
Well, she does something. It's called Talks GS. And she coordinates all the talent and everything like that. She used to work for David Fishoff, and he managed, when I met her, she was working for David Fishoff, who has the fantasy camps, and he managed the Monkees and Ringo Starr at the time. And she used to hang out with Ringo all the time, you know? So meeting Billy Joel's drummer was nothing to her. It's like, big deal. She didn't even like Billy Joel. I know. She didn't like the music, you know?
How can you not like Billy Joel's music, you know?
Well, she loves you too.
Oh, well, I like you too. But I mean, I like good songs.
Yeah, she's a you too. Like,
what's the book called? It's out now, of course. Let me look at that. There it is. Right.
It's called Liberty, Life, Billy, and the Pursuit of Happiness.
Yes. Yeah. What was that like writing a book? Did you have to, did you remember the stories? Because My friends, I think, remember him better. So I get him around and they're like, yeah, that one time you did. And then I go, oh, yeah. But, you know, do you remember him?
Well, it's the same thing with writing. When you write something down, it leads you to something else. So that's how the memory happened. And also, I hated the music when me and Billy split up. I wouldn't listen to it. I'd turn it off when it came on the radio, get pissed off again, you know, scream at somebody out my car window or whatever. But me and Russell Jabbers and Richie Cannata with the late Doug Stegmeier got inducted into the Long Island Music Hall of Fame as the Billy Joel band.
Right.
And I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go at all. And as a matter of fact, they wanted us to play one song. I sent somebody else to do a sound check. It was like, I'm not doing this shit. Because a friend of mine said, do you really want to go back there again? Do you want to do this again? You know? So I eventually did it because the other guys really wanted to do it. So I said, okay, I'll do it. We played one song. We ended up playing five songs. So the crowd went nuts because We sounded more like Billy did now because she doesn't have anybody related to the records. And now there's three of us up there that played on the records, you know?
Yeah.
So we sounded more like Billy. We had a guy singing and playing piano. And so we thought, why don't we do this? You know, why don't we really do it and play, you know? And so I started to relearn the songs again, and I started to fall in love with them again, you know, like, and all I could do is remember what it was like being in the studio recording those songs, you know? So that's how the memory came back for each song that we played, you know?
Right.
So it was cool to write it down, you know? I'm sure I missed them.
You go home and just start typing into the computer, and then the stories just start to unravel.
Yeah, they just keep going. They just keep going. You know, you start writing and you read it again, go, oh, I missed this little part, you know.
Yeah.
I know there's some goofs in there. Like I say that Russell Jabbers and Doug Stegmeier came to see me in a band when I was 17 years old, and that's when Russell knew he wanted to be in a band with me. And Russell says, no, it wasn't Doug. It was Howie that came with him.
Oh, wow.
It's like, I don't give a fuck. We're keeping it as Doug. Makes it better reading.
Fucking 50 years ago, you know?
Yeah, right. You're wrong, not me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you got the Slim Kings, and I heard the record from 17, and it sounded great, man. And
you like that stuff, huh?
You guys are, one of your things is you get a lot of songs placed on TV and shit, and that's a good revenue stream, right?
Well, that's where the money's at these days.
Right.
You can't get a record deal. Record deal, they want a 360 deal. They take everything. Your merchandise, your first child, everything they take. But, getting on TV and just a little snippet, you get money.
It's we're crazy, right?
It is. It's insane. It really is insane. And the Slim Kings, what's great about the Slim Kings is they're a whole lot younger than I am, you know?
I was looking at the photo, though. They've really made you look pretty good, though. You know what I mean?
Listen to me. I'm 70. My wife is 45. And the Slim Kings are in their 30s. You know? Wow. So, and I have a three-year-old.
Whoa! Really? You're 70 with a three-year-old.
Yeah.
You fucking outlaw, you.
I have three other daughters that are in their 30s. You know, one turned 40 recently.
Yeah.
And being with the Slim Kings, it's like, these young cats, man, they like, you know, I'm the old school guy. And the whole R&B thing that's happening now, they'll come up to me with a hip hop song and I'll go, we want to play a groove like this. And I'll listen to the groove and I'll go, that's an old Motown beat, man. They sampled the Motown beat, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where the connection really comes, you know? So it's great. They keep me young, you know? It's just wonderful to play, you know? We write our own stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
It sounded good, man. I was listening to it. I was like, this is good shit. You know, you never know, you know, 70-year-old guy.
You know what it is, too? You know what it is? People that have done what I've done, like career-wise, when they end the band that they're in, they always start another band that kind of sounds like the band that they were in, like a classic rock band.
Right.
I didn't want to do that. I did not want to do that. I wanted to sound fresh, but still have a little, you know, taste of the past and, you know, because things are very nostalgic now. You know, everybody wants to go back to black and white photos. Everybody wants to listen to records again, you know. So you got to have a little touch of that. But so it's cool. It's a lot of fun.
Are you into stand-up comedy at all?
I love stand-up comedy.
Yeah, you ever go down to the Comedy Cellar? I work down there quite a bit.
Do you? Yeah. No, I they have a lot of places out here in Brooklyn, different clubs that go to see comedy. You know, I mean, I remember, seeing like Steve Martin when he used to put the arrow over his head and play the banjo. He's the only guy, you know, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I just love that stuff. As a matter of fact, I got tickets to see Jim Gaffigan, and I got tickets to him, and they keep postponing and pushing it back further and further.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, when are we going to be out performing, you know?
Yeah. I love to see that shit. Last comedy I saw, I went to see Seinfeld.
Oh, really?
In a theater.
Yeah. He's
so
great.
Funny.
He's great.
He's another Long Island boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, did he buy Billy Joel's place?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he did.
He did, right? Wow.
I used to love Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, what a genius. Caddyshack?
I still watch the Carson clips, you know, when he was on Carson.
Oh, my God. When he first comes on Carson, man, I watched that about 100 times. I'll tell you, he's just murdering joke after joke after joke. I can't believe it. And you're going like, what the hell? There were some Carson performances that I remember specifically. Stephen Wright. I'll never forget the night he was on.
Hilarious.
Never forget
hilarious.
It. And then, of course, Dangerfield, never ever forgot it. And then Eddie Murphy when he was on it, like 18 years old.
Yep.
And then Kinison on Letterman. I never forgot that.
Insane.
Insane.
That man was insane.
Insane. Yeah, right? The comics make the musicians look like beginners.
They do. Yeah, they're up there by themselves. Yeah, yeah. They're the Elvises. They're Elvis.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Up there by yourself.
Were you an Elvis guy? It never really hit me.
Not until later on.
Right.
Not until later on. Never, you know, But then when like Rockabilly came back.
Right.
Remember with the Stray Cats and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When that started coming back, and then you listen to Elvis and you see like, whoa, okay.
That was a cool. big run, man. Jimmy Iovine really, like, all of a sudden, here comes the squirrel net zippers, Stray Cat, like that whole thing of like swing dancing came back, all for like 8 months.
It's killer. You know? It was killer.
It was.
It was killer.
Yeah. My favorite was Social Distortion out of that. You know, they were like way more edgier, Mike Ness, but man, did they play the shit out of that stuff.
Crazy stuff, man. It was crazy stuff. I remember going to these dances when I was living in Florida at the time. And this one hotel, once a week, would hold these dances with rockabilly stuff. The kids would come in, man, the tattoos and the shirts rolled up, just like the old days, the 50s, you know?
Totally. I used to call them time travelers. Yeah. You just show up, you're like, welcome. It's 1996. They're like, whoa.
Dude.
They got the fucking lucky strike in their mouth. Like, oh, man.
Yeah,
let me show you a move. They got the royal crown in their hair.
And they're throwing the chicks up in the air, like flipping them around.
Oh, yeah.
Flipping between the legs.
Wild shit, man. Wild shit. Well, you know, I hope to meet you one day when COVID's over. I'm in New York quite a bit. Do you got an Instagram?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, you got a Twitter
or anything? Facebook.
I can't thank you enough for doing the show, man. I really.
It was cool.
I felt for you on that hired gun. I really did, man. And it was a knockout when I heard how that went down. And you know, I'm glad that you didn't jump out the window, dude. You know?
I didn't. I didn't. I got close, but I didn't jump out the window.
And the Slim Kings have two records out, right?
Yes. Actually, we made three. But this new one is coming out like really soon this month.
That's the one I was listening to today, actually.
Yeah. I like Simple Things and what else? Are they Raw.
It sounds great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
we did it old school.
I saw that because the picture was like an old, it looked like a Neve or something. It looked like you're,
No, it's not even a Neve. It's an old piece of shit. I mean, half the things were missing. The studio, they use antique mics. All the instruments we played on were like from the 40s and stuff, you know.
Wow.
All this classic stuff was like, but the place was a dump.
Yeah, but it sounds great. I was listening to it. I go, this thing sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Nick Mouchon, the producer of that record, really did a great job.
Very cool. Very. Who did he work with?
He worked with the, what's her name? Amy Winehouse.
He did a couple of
and stuff. And who's the DJ now, the real popular DJ?
Oh, all of them. I heard a conversation that was going on behind me a couple of days ago at a cafe, and two girls were talking, and the one goes, I mean, he's a DJ. And the other girl goes, and I swear to God, I just felt like I'm from another time. The other girl goes, oh my God, I wouldn't even know how to act around him. Were you calm? And I was laughing. I was like, oh my God, the guy presses buttons. He presses buttons on the computer. Were you calm? It was unreal. I could hear the whole thing. I couldn't believe it. I felt like that old get off my lawn. I was like, I felt like turning around like, are you kidding me? Presses buttons. It was nuts, dude. All right. I love you, dude.
All right, dude.
Stay healthy out there, man.
We'll talk again.
I'll see you, bud.
Ciao. Later.